Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers consultant here in DCU Careers Service. Joining me today is Colin Malloy, who is head of HR, and Connor Nolan, who is a validation engineer from Trinity Biotech. So they're joining us here today just to explain what Trinity Biotech do and a little bit more about the graduate opportunities available in their company and just their career vision for those graduate roles. So first of all, thank you very much to both of you to joining us today on the show.
Thank you very much, Siobhan.
Brilliant. Thanks for having us.
No, it's great. So listen, Colm, I'm just going to start off with yourself. So maybe, listen, who and what are Trinity Biotech all about?
Well, Trinity Biotech are an Irish company, first off. I think that's important to say. We have about 550 staff globally, of which 220 are in our headquarters here in Bray. We have other locations in North America and Brazil, and we're actively growing in South Africa, and we're on the NASDAQ. So that gives you a bit of the scale about who we are. But what we actually do is we manufacture and market and develop diagnostic test kits. So we actually use those test kits we manufacture. We use them in clinical laboratories and point of care segments of the diagnostic market. And it's really to detect infectious diseases, sexually transmitted diseases, autoimmune disorders, hemoglobin disorders. But one of the big things that we've done this year is where we've been at one of the forefronts of the COVID piece as well. We have a CE mark approval for registration for part of the COVID space.
So what does that mean in reality, say, you know, in practice, what does that mean you're involved in COVID?
I suppose what we provide is the liquid that the virus would actually sit in for the safe transportation, where we manufacture that here, and then we would transport that to our various locations.
That's fantastic, because I mean, I think there has been a lot of, maybe not so much now, but earlier controversy over agents and various aspects of the testing process. So that's fantastic. That's actually been produced in Ireland. That must make a big difference then to the testing process in Ireland.
Well, 100%. And also, we also transport this to our other bases, primarily into America as well, so we can produce more of it here. So the test actually, for anybody who's a little bit more technical on the line, it uses a recombinant form of the coronavirus spike protein to detect the antibodies. So this detection of those of which indicate either past exposure to the virus or the desired immune response following vaccination. So it really does tie it all together. And to be part, I don't think there's anybody in the world that doesn't know what COVID-19 is, and coronavirus, unfortunately. So being part of that, or being part of that solution, or being part of its, you know, eradication of this, it's kind of great. And it's trying to get that message out there. And also, we're at the forefront with HIV testing, primarily in South Africa as well. So one of our test kits would actually detect that too. So there are a couple of the things there that we're heavily involved in.
That's very interesting, Colin, because I think, you know, when the COVID-19 pandemic started, I think people kind of just looked back into living memory, you know, would be that mean around the HIV virus and that challenge that came to us, you know. And it's just interesting that your company's kind of been involved in the two major, you know, epidemics, you know. There's obviously different terminology being used with both of them, but that's, you know, and even from, you know, the fear and the psychology around this, I think a lot of us looked back to that time when HIV became, or AIDS is really what we were talking about at that stage, because people were progressing from HIV to AIDS. You know, there was, you know, there was no space to remain within HIV. So, you know, it just, the world has changed an awful lot. But it's very interesting that as a company that you've been involved in these two key aspects.
And I think when you consider our average age is just less than 30, and the average service that we have for people here is 5 years. You know, we've been in business since 1992. So we've sort of grown, and we manufacture these things here in Bray, you know. So it's trying to, you know, it's we're here, and this is what we do, and this is what we actually try, and I think that's kind of a message.
Did you have to really ramp up production then? You know, like it's all very fine saying you're involved in it, but you weren't involved in it a year ago, and you know, so was this a product you already had, on, you know, it was just like, you know, a new use for it, or, you know, how did you scale up and out on this?
Well, we were leveraging, obviously, current processes, of which pretty much every company in the world who had certain processes in play for certain things, seeing can we actually leverage some of those processes to actually then adapt and pivot to assist in these things, or where can we actually add value? So we did have to ramp up quite actively when obviously this became a serious issue for the global economy. So we did have to ramp up, and we literally just went out there to try and get, using current staff, but also then hiring in large numbers to actually get volumes out, to get this this product, if I can call it that, to market, so to speak. Yeah.
Brilliant. So moving on then, just to, I suppose, more the traditional aspect, obviously this venture into the COVID end of things obviously is very new and obviously extremely relevant. But just tell us a little bit more about the company, in the sense around, you know, where it is as now and where is it kind of heading towards, you know, what's their mission and vision, you know, around this space?
Well, because we obviously have a current platform of processes and what we do, the whole idea is looking at innovation and how we actually then grow the business while maintaining what we have and leveraging current processes. It's looking at what's next? You know, what is the next thing that we should be sort of looking around the corner of and being in a position to actually, you know, be one of the people to actually fill that void? So we're now in a space of actually looking into other markets and going, well, what's actually happening there and how can we actually be at the forefront of producing a product that actually answers that? Nobody wants to say that there's going to be another pandemic. Nobody wants to say that certain things are going to happen. But I think there's enough eyes and ears now around the world about what is actually happening, where are things in trouble, and how can we actually be at the forefront of that? So we are actively now, because we're in multiple markets, working very closely with medics, healthcare providers, and just, you know, sectors and society about what we need to do. So a lot of work is done with medics about, well, what's next and where do we need to start looking, and so we don't have to be so reactive, that we can be a little bit proactive. And we work very closely with AI as a result of that to actually take that risk on for us to produce and develop something that, you know, we're taking on the risk here.
So you're talking about Enterprise Ireland, is it?
Enterprise Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah, Enterprise
no, you're Ireland. Okay.
So,
no.
Yes, we work very close with Enterprise Ireland from that as well. So we have to, you know, they're very strong in helping companies who want to take on a risk, if you want to call it that, because you want it to work. But they then realize that this is often obviously an opportunity that you can do. So there is huge growth plans and great potential for us to actually develop what we have. We have two buildings here in Bray, building one and building two, as we call it. And building two is where we actually produce, and that's where our manufacturing is. So we have a huge processing going on there. So we want to leverage those to actually be the next thing as well. So there's great plans.
Mm. Many are employed worldwide and many are based here in Ireland.
We 550 globally, and we've 220 odd around here in Bray. I say odd because we flex it up and down depending on the productivity.
Yeah, so, well, that's massive then, isn't it?
Yeah. We've got it's a big operation. Now, obviously, COVID has created, you won't see 220 here, but you will see that the production side is still very active, and then maybe the support functions might be a little bit less in terms of physicality. But, you know, that's what COVID has done. We're not the only company in that space.
Mm. Well, just interesting, you were just saying about, you know, kind of looking for what's next and things like that. I suppose what we're really speaking to is that agility. And, you know, and I think alongside a lot of companies and, you know, alongside ourselves and DCU and even the career service here, this concept, you know, of agility, we thought we were agile before this. And now it's something, oh, like we really, really got very agile, you know. So it's kind of just keeping that kind of agility and without a fatigue as well, you know, there's a balance to be got, you know, like the what next kind of make you forget about what now, you know. So it's just getting that balance right as well, as I say, it's quite a challenge for companies as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, and a lot of it as well is leveraging technologies that are there.
Reusing, upcycling.
You know, sort of like pivoting using the current processes instead of just saying, okay,
very good
break
point.
That and start again. I mean, look at Amazon, like they're now opening up a big distribution center in Ireland because of what's happened with Brexit and what's happened with things like that. So they've had to pivot.
Well, but about they, time, you know. I think we all always felt aggrieved that we didn't have an Amazon.ie now. You know, we always felt a little bit aggrieved about that.
But that's a company that's had to react to what's happening in the market. Now, that was obviously something that was coming down the track and they had plenty of time to think about it. Whereas the coronavirus, that sort of started to build. It's not going to affect us. God, it has affected us. What do we do now? So you then go, well, how do we actually help this? And we already had a production plant in America producing something because their testing was a little bit behind in America. So we then started leveraging, trying to help them out with that. So you have a lot of that, let's produce it and get it over to America. But then what you have, Siobhan, is the transportation of the kit.
Yeah.
In America, everything is shipped by truck.
Mm, so we're now having huge landmass.
So we're having to fly it now, and it was never tested for flight. So we've had to do a whole load of work on testing for flight.
Because that's so interesting.
So you all these things that you just don't think about, and you don't know, because there's nobody had any data to say, well, this is how you transport such a thing. Because this is brand new.
Traditionally, well, okay, this product is brand new, but just say when you were saying, it was just interesting that you were going to say about transportation, because it was in my mind, and I said, maybe that's just more Brexit I'm thinking of, you know, because we're so focused on supply chain at the moment. Yeah. But that's just interesting. So would you, that kind of product be generally shipped rather than flown, is it? Or
yeah, because
you usually have better lead times, you know, isn't it? But you don't now.
Exactly. Now, you could put it on a boat. Right, but you don't, time is of the essence now. So it's not like a flu vaccine where everybody knows come October what's the strain of flu, here it is, and we get it out, and that you have a lead into it. This is something that just we have to, so how do we make this happen quickly? And it has to be obviously appropriate, and it has to be all those FDAs and all those regulations, because we're heavily regulated here and everything that we do. So I mean, there's so many tentacles that come into this business, which I've learned, and I'm only here 2 months, Siobhan.
It's fascinating, I'd say, because even what we're talking about today, it's kind of making me think, oh, what about this and what about that?
Yeah,
that's the beauty of working in HR. You end up working in so many different types of companies, don't you?
Yeah.
You can really kind of focus on an occupation setting there that speaks to you as well as doing the HR function as well.
100%. And you, like anybody who's on this, who's listening to this, who wants to get into HR, I think being understanding the commercial and the business, I think that adds huge value. So I think that that's something for people to be aware of, that you just don't just focus on your own job, focus on the broader picture as well about where you fit into it. But it also means that because of the scale of what we do here in Trinity, that there's so many different roles, which we'll probably touch on later on, that it's not just in engineering and manufacturing. There's so many pieces around it.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole business support functions.
Totally.
Everything. Totally. I just actually might bring in Connor now at this point, because Connor, I'm not sure whether you're able to hear the full part of what Colin was saying there, but just to refresh there, and I think it brings it neatly into your role as a validation engineer. Colin was actually speaking about that, you know, even that, say, the product now has to be flown, maybe instead of shipped. So there is a whole validation, you know, around even, you know, testing around the product then in being transported differently. So you might talk to us a little bit about the whole role of validation and checking and the whole role of engineering in this space.
My role as a validation engineer is to help ensure and document that all of our equipment and associated processes and products are the way that we want them to be. So the end patients can get the correct care that they need.
Brilliant. So what you're really trying to do, that when the person receives it, it's as good as when it was just coming off the line in the factory, really. It's as good as then. It's stable. It remains the same. It's as valuable when they get it as when it came off the line.
Exactly, yes. And there'd be many different types of studies that we'd have to do pre and post-production as well. So, for example, temperature mapping of the and humidity mapping of the rooms that the individual components are manufactured into, transportation studies. So as you mentioned, between flying and transporting by road, what temperatures would they be subjected to and for how long, and worst case scenarios as well.
Brilliant. So, you know, you're doing this for a purpose, and this has, I suppose, its historical references in that, you know, you need to check this because it matters. So, you know, just from an engineering perspective, in the type of products that you are manufacturing, you know, talk to me, like, this temperature, air quality, what are the big kind of environmental considerations?
At Bray, it would be mainly temperature and humidity. Now, some of the equipment that we get in, they have an altitude specification for operation, but because of where Bray is located, things like that wouldn't really come into consideration. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly temperature and humidity for environmental conditions. Yeah. And then we have things for in-process parameters as well, such as speed and acceleration of spraying machines and dispensing machines, and temperature ranges of storage equipment from freezers to fridges, and walk-in cold rooms as well.
So there's so many micro steps, you know, and there's steps within the steps. So I suppose when you really kind of go to look at this, you have to go to quite a deep extrapolation of the processes. It's, you have your majors, but every major will have maybe subsections of minors that needs to be tested as well.
Exactly, and we'll also have tolerances as well.
Okay.
So we'll have an ideal set point, and then an upper tolerance and a lower tolerance, and action set points. So when things go out of spec, we have to investigate why that happened, and how do we prevent that from happening in the future, and also what potential impacts that could cause to the relevant component.
Yeah, brilliant. Just going back to yourself now, Conor, you're actually alumnus of DCU, and I understand from our pre-talk that you graduated in 2017 and you have a degree in biomedical engineering. So maybe talk us a little bit more about your time. I believe you were an intern first and then progressed into a graduate role. So maybe you can talk about your experience of being on Intra and take us through.
Yeah, so our Intra was, Intra is what DCU refers to as work experience. That was in third year for my course. So that was 5 months in Trinity for myself. And I from day one, really, I started validating actual equipment. So I started with very, very basic equipment, as I didn't have experience in validation at the time. But from there, I gained more and more knowledge, and I was trusted with bigger and bigger projects. And that's why when I was coming to the end of my internship, it was mentioned to me that Trinity would like to see me back when I graduated. And I've been here since finishing in DCU.
And from an engineer speak point of view now, because obviously I'm not an engineer now, right? But I suppose if we are thinking about the engineers or the budding engineers back in the classroom now, and they're in second, third and fourth or even first year at the moment, you know, what's the engineering goosebumps for you now in your role?
I suppose understanding how all of the various equipment and processes work and come together to produce the products that we produce. That would be the big thing for me anyway.
So it's the myriad, it's the intersection, it's the what ifs, you know, if that goes wrong, what's that? You know, it's the trickle down, the, you know, that big kind of mind map for you, is it?
Exactly, yes.
That's the goosebumps for you. On the problem solving, like engineers are noted for their problem solving, but I often find is that it can be so inherent in you that you sometimes don't always realise, you know, how much of a problem solver you are. But just speak to me about, you know, around that problem solving side of things, and why, how does it represent in you, in the sense of, you know, is it that you're constantly looking for problems or you just enjoy the challenge of the problem solving? Just talk to me about how problem solving is for you.
I wouldn't consciously always look for problems, but I do enjoy the challenge of solving them. So, for example, the transport medium that Colin mentioned previously, when we were developing the manufacturing lines for that, we were working on one of the new machines that we had to get in for, one of the labelling machines, and the tubes, they kept getting caught towards the end, and it took us a few hours to figure out how the transport tubes were getting caught in the machine, and what we had to do to rectify that and make it available for, or make it suitable for validation and then available to production.
So what I would see is a nightmare situation. You would say, oh, you know, you'd kind of be able to go towards the problem and say, great, not that great that you have a problem, but your mental agility would be such that, oh, right, I'm going to get dug in here now. I'm going to really get this, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Whereas other people...
Exactly, yes.
Other people would be kind of going, I'm having a meltdown about this. The production line has stopped. You know what I mean? So, and that's great. And that's why we need different people to do different jobs in the place as well, isn't it? Because we want people to go towards some things and then other people to go towards other things, other issues. You know what I mean? I'm sure if someone in the finance department had a problem, you'd be running the other way. So isn't that really it?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's fantastic. Just thinking about your time in DCU, and, you know, obviously you did the biomedical side of things, and obviously very relevant to your career direction now. So have you any tips for any student, you know, that, you know, just within the engineering degree process at the moment, and, you know, what's the best way of phrase? What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
I suppose I wish I knew not to shy away from certain aspects in the course. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't think they would be as relevant to what I would end up doing.
Good point.
So for example, risk assessments, they're quite a big thing and important thing for us as a company, and what I'm currently working on at the moment for our COVID test kits as well. So I suppose my advice would be, don't shy away from things in the course.
They're there for a reason.
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose that's really interesting, because I think any of us who are studying any course at any stage, you know, there is this immediate push and pull of assignments or deadlines or exams and just your own energy right there then in the moment. And you often make selective, I suppose, decisions, you know, to just get through today, isn't it? But it's just to kind of think broadly about your education and say it's there on the program for a reason. It could be very interesting from kind of saying, listen, I need to be, you know, you don't have to be excellent at everything, but kind of push yourself into that good enough space, you know, and pay attention to all aspects of the program, because it may not be immediately relevant as to why they're there, but as you quite rightly said, yeah. And that's fantastic as well, because the other side of that is, Connor, is what I'm picking up from it as well, that your degree, that if you can, I suppose, give it the energy and the commitment while you're doing it, it is a, you know, it can keep giving back to you for a long, long time in the workplace as well.
Yeah, so I think any of the engineering degrees that are offered in DCU, they're quite tough degrees.
But if, and that's you, why you probably you had to make some of the decisions earlier on your focus as well. Yeah, because they are
as
tough.
You say,
yeah.
If you put in as much work as you can, it'll pay dividends. Mm.
Really good advice. And that's wisdom. It's the wisdom, you know, of being on the other side and the reality of the workplace. So thank you for your honesty on that, because that's hugely powerful as well. And Connor, I really appreciate that. So I'm just going to bring yourself back in, Colm, and we might just have a chat now in around the whole thing around, you know, we're around the graduate roles, the whole kind of concept of moving from intern to graduate. And you might let us know about, you know, any developments in that area for you.
Yeah, so obviously Connor coming from DCU and obviously doing biomedical studies as well. It's sort of, when I've joined, there's a whole avenue, my career, I've always leveraged universities and colleges to tap into the talent that's local to us. So for us, we're going to be broadening out our internship and graduate program as the year progresses, because there's an awful lot of roles here that leverage that. Mm-hmm. Because what you don't want is having a graduate and intern coming to your business that's left on their own.
Sure.
So a lot of the time it's their first job. You don't have to wear suits here. That's a good thing. Right? I've worked in professional services where you have to be suited. And
oh, yeah.
And bless you see people with shirts and ties.
Sometimes it's a bit of a suit of armour, though, as well, isn't it? You know, you feel you have your suited and booted on, you know, you're ready for the day.
You want the person to be comfortable.
Mm.
And I think we have a number of sort of entry-level roles, if I can say that.
Absolutely.
Allow more. And then part of that then is that you can actually then rotate around a number of areas. So you're learning as you go. So be it as an intern, be it in year three of your degree or year four, whichever it is, then you can actually then sort of saying, well, is this for me as well? So there's a touch of that. So there's a bit of, you know, positive learning, because sometimes you come out and you go, hey, I'm not sure about this. I have this qualification, but is that the exact type of job I want? Maybe it's a different sector I need to be in, but leveraging my degree. So it's like a first date. You know, I love you, you love me, you know, so it's a bit of that. So, but we're going to be developing that out as the year goes on. Connor's just a great example of someone who's come through a system and is now in the business and leveraging his qualification he got from TCU. So we want to look at where in our business we can actually leverage and the introduction of these type of roles and the number of. And then you get into your milk round and you're getting to that beauty pageant, as I say, that comes around towards the tail end of each year. So we will be quite active on that. That would be my vision for the rest of the year. So watch this space, as they say. And we're now advertising our positions on DCU as well, which is good. And we will then be leveraging the graduate program and internship program as well through the intra office.
Brilliant.
So, watch this space. So, and it's a case of then, but it's also looking at the type of roles that we would have. It's probably the next thing to start by. Like,
brilliant.
We have engineer roles. We have scientific roles. We have quality roles. We have finance roles. We have marketing roles. We have HR roles. We have the full bandit. Yeah. So we're not we're not just doing widgets here. Mm-hmm. We're like, we also have regulatory affairs. We're in that almost that legalistic space as well, that we have huge governance constraints, which Connor would be very aware of, that sometimes it's almost, you know, it's almost stifling and suffocating, but you kind of have to make sure what we're doing is good. You can't just kick it out and hope it's okay. You've got to make sure that all the everything is crossed off correctly, just like Connor has said. You know, it's what is it the way it was when it left here? So there's a whole load of processing engineering that we have to look at as well. So we constantly advertise roles that are applicable to us right now. So, and they're from graduate level, even to people who have a couple of years experience. Because, I mean, as I said, our average experience here is 5 years.
Yeah.
So we're not looking at people who are 20 years experience and so on. We're looking for people who can actually go back to that agile thing you said, Siobhan, that people who are agile can pivot quickly, can actually look at different roles, because it's not a steady state anymore. You have to react to what the market's doing. You need people who can react, who are comfortable reacting, who are change agents, if you want to get into that, you know, Google talk. That's what you're looking for. So the roles that we would tap into, and that's why I wanted to advertise in DCU, because a number of your courses would lean into where we are. Mm-hmm. So if we advertise a role, you would hope your alumni, your recent grads or your intro can say, okay, there's jobs in that space and that's the qualification I'm doing. That's brilliant.
Can I ask you there as well, Colm, just, I know we're very lucky to have Connor on here as an engineer, but would you be able to give us a bit of insight more on the scientific roles while I have you?
Yeah, so it's kind of like on it wouldn't be heavy science. Mm-hmm. But we would have a number of PhDs here as well. We'd be kind of on the new product. So it's looking at the scientific makeup. So it's even like that, the liquid that the COVID virus is sitting in, is making sure that is scientifically sound. So you are kind of looking at the biochemist side of things, you know, the chemistry side of the science. So that's where it kind of goes. But, and I will always say it, we're looking for people with a personality. We're looking for people who can actually come and make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not somebody who likes to hire same. I like to hire somebody that can actually bring something different while being able to do the job.
Yeah, brilliant. Because, you know if we're all saying the same thing, well, then we get into a groupthink situation then, and it's not good for anybody. A bit of argy-bargy is never any harm, a bit of difference.
But you just stay the same. Mm. You know, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever given was always hire somebody to replace you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you should be doing. Mm. So I'm not saying that we have that right across the business, but, you know, when people apply for positions here, most of our managers will have a number of hats on. Mm. They will be encouraged to say, well, does that person bring something else to the table?
Yeah.
Could they be somewhere else?
Yeah. Someone once said to me, you know, you should always hire somebody better than yourself, so you can have a cup of coffee and read the paper and get out a piece of white paper and a pen and start planning and dreaming. Because if you're caught up in the doing, you're not looking to the next thing. You need that space, that kind of to let the, you know, to get that creativity going. But if you're fire engine all the time and reacting, you're a very busy person and you think you're the bomb going around the place doing stuff, but ultimately you're only really working on yesterday's problems. You're not working on today or tomorrow at all.
And your to-do list is very operational. It's not very strategic.
Okay, I'm getting very guilty about my to-do list now. Here,
Well, you're the post-it beside you.
Oh, stop it. Actually, we all need a bit of that. As long as it doesn't get into a book-length format, we're not doing too bad. Well, then, if it gets into that, some of those things don't need to be done. Okay, so just around the application process, can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so, I mean, any role that's positioned up on our website or on through your portal as well, your career site, the applications that go in there, as soon as they come, they go through into what's called an ATS here, which is an application tracking system. Most companies have those, okay? So as soon as it passes through there, it drops into our place, and then the managers see that here as well. Okay. So it's not just a HR, like we manage it and we own it and all that type of thing. But the managers who are hiring would see the applications. Then what they do is we would poke and prod them to say, the roles are, a number of applications have come in. So every Monday morning, we contact the managers. So I'm giving you right the steps that we do and sort of saying, have a look at those roles and tell us who you would like to interview. So there might be some pre-screen depending on the area, particularly the science areas. There might be a bit of a pre-screen because the CV only says so much, that there might be some more specifics that they want filled in. So a pre-screen might go out, just in a, it's a Word doc that the person just fills in. They send it back and then the manager will say, yeah, I want to interview that person. And then it happens quite quickly. So that's probably the turnaround is probably about a week and a half all up and where we're actively recruiting.
That's very quick nowadays.
And then normally the next, well, see, everything is remote now, Siobhan. So that's true. You don't need people in a room and you don't need people to get on a bus and come to us. Some of it is just you just sending a link. So it shouldn't be onerous. But look, you can get tied up in work and that's what happens. But so then there may be second interviews. But as I said, because somebody has been pre-screened in us, in essence, somebody might have spoken to somebody in HR as a sense check to make sure how passionate are they about moving or looking for a job, then the manager goes, this is a great person. We might get them to see one other person in the business as well. So all up probably two and a half weeks, I'd like to think that we sort of get things wrapped up as much as we can. I'm being very aggressive in my timelines, but that's what we should be aiming for, you know.
Yeah, well, what's that great phrase? Every task expands to the time you give it.
Exactly.
Can I ask you then just about the process then in around, say, the selection side? So you have an application form.
Yeah.
Now, and then you have one interview, two stages of interviews.
Yeah, so it's probably, when you say application form, we actually don't have an application form. We literally just get your CV dropped in. Then you might get a form following that.
Okay.
If there's some clarification required, okay? And that's normally driven by the business side.
Okay.
Then it's one interview with the hiring manager. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody in HR there, and then maybe one other. So maximum two interviews, Siobhan.
Okay.
Follow CV and maybe a pre-screen.
Mm-hmm. Now, just bearing in mind the application process and things like that, what would be your top tips, Colm, on anyone applying now to Trinity Biotech?
Well, I suppose I'm not only Trinity, but any company I've been in. As I said, every company has an application tracking system. So don't apply multiple times. Your name goes in and the first thing somebody in HR will go, that person's applying for everything. Okay. So apply for what you want. Don't apply for what you hope. Mm-hmm. And you just blanket apply. Also, job descriptions are primarily written by hiring managers. HR might have an overview. But remember, the first four or five things and what the responsibilities of the role are probably the most important. Now, I'm open to any other HR person out there who wants to give out to me, but this is my experience.
Well, we'd often tell students really look to the top half of the job description. That's the core bit, all right.
But the reality is the people who are writing the spec are the people who want the person to be able to do those four things. So they're the most important. The bottom bit is kind of padding, which is what the expectations are. And then your CV should be tailored to those four things. Don't just have the same CV for everything. Try and tailor it as much as you can or your experience to it. Because when the hiring manager looks at your CV, what are they looking for? They're looking for those four things that are on the job spec. Mm-hmm. They're scanning your CV. They are looking across and they're quickly going, yeah, he or she has those things. I'll interview them. It's as quick as that most times.
Yeah, because basically, you know, and it's just to remind people, it's just to think about what a job description is, that the company has put out that they have a business problem and they're looking to the marketplace for a business solution. But that business solution is coming in the form of a human being, i.e. you. So they have put out this document. You know, it may not be the best document in the world, but it is a document that describes what they're looking, what their business issue is. Yep. And then your role in your CV or your application and your cover letter or whatever the case may be is to speak to that business problem and position how your potential solution to that business problem.
Yeah, and where you've had examples. So what people should have is achievements if they have them. Put them in there and move them up the page. so that the manager sees it. Don't have it deep in your CV.
Mm-hmm. Might pop a bit of it in the profile if it's very relevant, or
just have it more on the front page, because they read the first page soon. The first thing they do is they flick to see how many pages. Then they'll flick back to the start and go who they are, where they've gone to college, and what their experience is. Yeah. You know, it's common sense, but unfortunately, I don't think DCU have a course called common sense like any other college. Yeah. So it's literally be the mind of the reader, not the mind of the sender.
Yeah.
So, and it's tailoring your CV or your experience doesn't change, but tailor it to what the job is.
Mm-hmm. So it's really about, you know, we can write a lot of information about ourselves on our CV or application or LinkedIn profile, but we have to stand back and say, what is useful for the reader to know about us and what provides evidence to their business problem?
And have it front and center, because the nobody reads it all front to start, back to front.
No, it's scan read, unfortunately, folks.
It's scan read. And some companies, not us, have computerized generated stuff to pull out keywords. So, you know, I mean, if you apply to some of the multinationals, you have to put in a certain font. And if you have to do that, you know, a computer or a bot is actually scanning your CV.
That's a very good point, yeah.
You know, so those sort of things are really important. And also make sure that your email is correct.
Okay.
And if you are looking for a job, be on your emails first thing in the morning, lunchtime, and early evening.
Great advice.
That's when companies source.
Brilliant.
They don't source during, it's very rare that they would source during the day to kind of look for people around those times. Because why? That's when people are on commutes. That's when people are on lunch or when people are at home.
Okay. Well,
that's
done.
When people apply.
Great tip.
So just be around those sort of things. And do reply to emails if companies send to you. Don't be afraid to reply. Okay. I get a lot of times where people come in any update on this and you go back, unfortunately, things have changed. You get no reply back.
Yeah.
Now, that would make you think that they've applied for a number of jobs, and that's fine. Personality is key.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get that across in a CV.
And it's a professional etiquette then as well. It's very, very important.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And it's really important that your personality comes across as much as you can on your on your documentation. I'm not saying that it has to be colours and all that.
Oh, no.
But you need to differentiate as much as you can if you're not going to get FaceTime. And it needs to come across. If you have a LinkedIn profile, try and demonstrate your personality. If you're on Facebook and Twitter and all those, be careful. Make sure if you do have another life that you don't have that as a public presence. Companies do look at those platforms. So be careful.
It's great. No, it's terrific advice.
Because what you're trying to do is trying to understand, well, this person seems to have something. Then from a HR point of view, I hire for personality. I hire for fit. I hire for, will this person be okay to adapt to the way we might be quirky? Because I understand that. So it's having that personality and it's having that sort of, almost like that eye contact, that all those things you'd expect to hear. But you don't want somebody that is going to be, you know, monotone, same. You want somebody with a bit of passion. And that can come across on a CV very easily.
Brilliant.
You can just, you know, write it in a certain way that give me this job. I won't make a mistake. This is for me. You know, and don't be afraid if you get to interview, say those things. It's your one time to shine. You know, you got an hour.
Absolutely.
And it's getting those sort of things across. Because then, as I said, companies are hiring with a number of hats. They're hiring for innovation now. They're hiring for change. Traditionally in the past, a lot of companies would have looked outside of Ireland as well for candidates and talent. But with the coronavirus and the challenges that brings now, the talent we're all looking for is in Ireland. So there's a huge opportunity for people to really stand up and go, I'm here, I'm ready for you, hire me. And I think that will actually give people, going back to your goosebumps moments, it will give hiring managers goosebumps to go, this person wants this. They're passionate.
Yeah, so we're really coming back to that career motivation.
Oh, totally. And that's what I'm saying is, have your CV tailored to the job. Make sure that this is something you want to do. Don't multiple apply for the same company for multiple roles, because then the company are going, well, what does he or she want?
It's confusing. You know? unless you're asked to rank, you know what I mean, if it's a graduate program or something like that, different. No,
That's completely different. But if there's open roles and so on and so forth. When I was in Grant Thornton back in the day, we would have had, which was your preference, would you prefer tax audit, corporate finance and so on. 100% agree with you, Siobhan, sure.
Just going to bring Connor in there. Are you still with us, Connor?
I am.
That's right. I lost you there for a while. We got you back in there. So Connor, just your own top tips there. I mean, Colm has given us terrific ones there from that whole application process. Any tips from your own perspective?
I think Colm covered the main one. So try and tailor the CV or your CV as much as possible to the job description. Make it, don't have it too long, because people don't want to read 10 pages. But also make it easy to read. So the layout, for example, make it nice and visually appealing. Because if it isn't, for example, people also don't want to read the solid square block of text either. So space it out reasonably as well as you can.
Yeah, so it's just not all like a mash of words that, you know, there's enough white space. Yeah. You can scan, read it and get the pertinent information straight into the eyeball, straight into the brain and compute it inside. Is that, you know, kind of really kind of...
Exactly. Yeah. And even if you don't have career experience, if you've had previous jobs from sort of secondary school, absolutely, use your experiences from that, so tailor them towards what the job you're applying for needs.
Brilliant. Listen, I think we're going to wrap up on this. I think it's been fascinating. It's fantastic that, you know, such a large amount of people are employed in Ireland, part of a worldwide company, of course. But obviously, it's very interesting at the moment that you're so involved in the COVID. But obviously, that you were obviously a very successful company without that, and plenty of things going on for the company, and great future, obviously, as well. So I really appreciate you both coming on the show today. I've learned an awful lot, and I think you've given great tips, great advice, and I suppose a kind of opening up of our own thinking about how to approach the application process. So thank you both very much.
Thanks very much, Siobhan. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks, Siobhan.